Oh, a voice from the background. My name's Simon Braley. I'm the chair of the Calder Valley Community Land Trust. For those of you that have been to our previous seminars this year, this is the third and final one. I hope that you found the other two, if you've been entertaining and informative. Just before we start, I'll give you the normal sort of rules about escape routes, and the toilets are through the bar. So in case of any emergency, please leave as quickly as you can. We're not expecting any fire alarms, so if it rings, take it as being an active one and do what you need to do. Hopefully people have some awareness of what the Calder Valley Community Land Trust is. We're a member-led organisation trying to deliver affordable housing in the Calder Valley. And as part of that role, we've tried to sort of address housing issues, which our members and other concerned parties have raised with us, and hence why we're all here tonight. To talk about the impact of Airbnb, positive and negative. We've got three speakers, plus Paul, our staff member, who's also going to talk to you about having spoken to local agents, I think, and got a local angle on things. I'll introduce each speaker individually, let them speak, and then we'll have questions at the end when everybody's spoken. I think that makes it more sensible, and we can have a bit more of a conversation rather than grilling any of the speakers in particular. So our first speaker is Isaac Rose. Isaac is from Hebden, went to Calder High School, so some of you may well be very well acquainted with him. He now works as a tenant organiser in Manchester, where he's been there for 7 years, and he is co-author of a report called Short-Term Lets in Manchester, Time to Act, which basically traces the impact of Airbnb in Manchester and its ongoing impact on housing supply and affordability.
Hi everyone. Yeah, I've been given the dubious honour to open this session. So yeah, my name's Isaac. I definitely know quite a few of you in here. I grew up in Hebden. I lived in Manchester for 7 years now. And yeah, I work as a tenant organiser in Manchester. And one of the big issues that has kind of come up for some of the members of our organisation, particularly in areas of the inner city, is properties on their streets turning into Airbnbs. So what you see is a kind of whole house becoming a kind of Airbnb property, and this brings lots of issues in terms of noise, in terms of you know, often these are party flats, so you'll have weekend hen-do's, stag-do's, whatever, people coming, making a load of noise. You know, you've got people who say it's like having a nightclub next door. But the other impact it's had is that you've got professional Airbnb landlords buying up the housing on the street and turning them into these very lucrative short-term lets. so what I'm going to do before we kind of get into all of that is just give a couple of stories, because obviously we're in Hebden today where the situation is slightly different, but I do think there's lots of commonalities. Then I'm just going to give a bit of an overview of like what Airbnb actually is, and this is from this report that we produced last year. And then I'm going to talk us through a bit the findings of the report, and then touch on at the end some of the recommendations, but I'm going to leave most of the kind of technical stuff to some of the other speakers, but obviously we can come back to in the discussion. So two anecdotes that I think are kind of useful for framing in terms of where we are. One is, you know, I came back tonight and had my tea at home. The house is on a hill, and I was kind of told that one of the neighbours in the last couple of years has turned an outhouse into an Airbnb where there's 6 beds. This is an outhouse that never had planning permission to have beds or anything like that, but it's now an Airbnb flat that takes people, you know, year round. They make a lot of money off this, and it's advertised as a sort of nice place in the countryside to go. And some of the amenities there include power showers and baths, so it's a really relaxing place to go. Only problem is that the kind of area is run off a spring. So in the summer, the number of residents using that spring increases by 30%. And this summer, the water went dry for 5 days because of added pressure on the resources there. Another example is, you know, I know a lot of people who grew up here, who want to live here, and I have friends who've wanted to live in Hebden Bridge, and they find it extremely hard to find anywhere to live to rent or to buy. And I think it's true that one of the reasons why this is because Hebden Bridge is increasingly a tourist town, and you will have people buying second homes and places to let out to tourists. This is something we've seen in the southwest of the country as well. So these two things, I think, indicate the two major problems with Airbnb. One is that it has impact on the surrounding infrastructure of a neighbourhood, whether that's, you know, 18 homes, 18 people living off a spring, or an inner city area where you've got, you know, party flats happening day in, day out, rubbish collection, all that kind of stuff. The other thing is the structural impact it has on housing and housing supply and housing affordability. So Airbnb obviously markets itself as a sharing platform, but I think we can really say that this is something of a myth. It's not really anymore a case of, you know, people letting out, you know, one or two spare rooms in their house to guests, although that does happen. Increasingly, the majority of lets in Airbnb globally are entire home lets. So in London, there are almost 90,000 properties on Airbnb. This was taken in 2020, and 56% of them were entire home lets. In Paris, it's 86% of the stock is home lets. And, you know, go down in major cities and major places where Airbnb is used, it's usually whole homes that are being let out. Obviously, these are homes that could otherwise be lived in, either by owner-occupiers or long-term lets. But why aren't they doing this, I think, is the question. And obviously, there's a really simple answer, which is that short-term lettings market is incredibly lucrative. You can make far, far more money renting out within short-term lets compared to either long-term lease as a private, you know, a private landlord. It will also have an upward inflationary pressure on house prices. So Airbnb kind of acts as this structural bit of the housing market that is accelerating inaffordability and accelerating things like neighbourhood transitory populations. So our research, basically, we wanted to move the debate on towards these kind of impacts that it has on the structural nature of housing affordability, and move it away from these kind of short-term problems such short-term problems such as noise and nuisance. So that's what the report went on to look at. How much more have I got? Okay. So in Manchester, there's been a large increase in Airbnb and other short-term lets. And one of the main problems, which is something that I think we'll discuss in much more detail with the representative from the council, is that in England at the moment, there's currently basically no powers available to local authorities to regulate this. So it's a completely unregulated sector. Part of this is because short-term lets is a relatively new phenomenon in the last 10 years. It's been something that's been enabled by platforms and other similar kind of... It's a novel thing. It's been enabled by the platform economy. It's been enabled by platforms like Booking.com and Airbnb. So it's a very, very new thing, and I think regulators have not really been able to keep up with it. So whereas we might look in other countries, particularly in Southern Europe, where councils, local governments have had the power to kind of restrict, control, and really get a grip with this problem. In England at the moment, there is really no power that councils have to really get a grip of this. This is something that I think will be touched on a lot more. That's kind of the problem. That's the situation. And I think what we've been doing is we've been mapping Airbnb in a very kind of local way, and then we've been using that knowledge to lobby the council and ultimately to lobby the government to really get a grip on this. So at the moment, there's a white paper being put through by the government around the tourism, kind of tourism as a recovery strategy to the pandemic. And part of that is a consultation around whether council should be given more powers to deal with this problem. We've been pushing, along with various other allies around the country, to really get a grip of this problem, to give councils the power to refuse conversions into short-term lets, so that you would create a separate planning category for a short-term let, which, you know, in the instance of this case with the outhouse, that would have to be now put through the planning system. It would have to be a dedicated planning category of a short-term let. And once you got that in, you can start to zone areas of towns or cities as whether you have a short-term let or you don't have a short-term let and what conditions there are on those. But at the moment, basically, none of these powers exist. And I think it's a major growing issue in inner city areas where there's high demand for kind of transitory tourism and things like that, but also rural areas like Hebden Bridge in the southwest of England, the Lake District, to really, really get councils to have the power to get a grip on this. Ultimately, and I suppose this is probably the final point to say, is that ultimately I don't think councils will get a grip on this unless communities are organising around this issue, because Airbnb itself is a highly organised organisation. It employs a kind of team of lobbyists, but it also employs so-called community organizers, which basically work with the hosts to kind of organize them as pressure groups within their town, their city, or whatever, so that they actually employ community organizing techniques to organize people who have a material interest in keeping Airbnb the unregulated sector it is in. So, you know, what we've been doing in the context of the tenants union, but I think in the context of a CLT here, is actually you need to organize around this issue and organize our own pressure groups against this issue of short-term lets, because ultimately, yeah, we need to make a significant amount of noise on this issue to move it, I think, beyond this question of just like nuisance and noise and more towards like trying to think of it within the broader problems in the housing crisis. So that would kind of be my end note. I mean, I was with some activists who are organising in Lisbon at the moment, where they're pushing for a citywide referendum on the power to ban Airbnb. Obviously, I don't think this kind of power exists in this country. but they were doing this basically as a way to kind of mobilise people around the issue. I think they needed to raise 10,000 signatures in Lisbon, and then they were allowed to have a citywide referendum. But the way they did it was in neighbourhood level assemblies where people came and shared the issue of living with Airbnb and all these kind of issues, and they really were organizing it. And a nice place to end is that I'd been in Hebden not long before, and I'd seen the graffiti that said squat the Airbnbs, and I shared this with these people in Lisbon, and they thought it was absolutely wonderful, and kind of took this heart, this idea of there being a kind of global or transnational struggle against something like Airbnb, which, you know, is an international company with serious interests and serious capability to create the kind of lack of regulatory framework that we live in at the moment, and with all the kind of social impacts that come with that. So I'll leave it there. I hope that was kind of useful as an introduction. and yeah, I'll pass on. Thank you.
Thank you, Isaac. We've gone from somebody who's incredibly local now to our second speaker, Emanuele Dal Carlo, who's not at all local and is joining us all the way from Venice, I think, tonight. Yeah. he's also got a hugely lengthy CV. But rather than me go through all that, I wonder if it might be better if for him just explain his background and where he's coming from and what his involvement is in Fairbnb, and hopefully they'll move the conversation on and see where we're going to.
Thank you for having me, and I want to start saying that when I was hearing Isaac speaking, it was like a time machine, because we did have the same, practically we did the same journey. I started as an activist with this project in my city, Venice, which probably, as you know, has a very difficult relationship with tourism, is kind of a touristic city and cannot live without tourists. But at the same time, tourism has become this all-consuming industry that is kind of defining the city. It's no more a complete place. It doesn't have all the services and functions that a normal city would have. because tourism has become the main industry. So I really feel for the journey that you're doing, and I actually agree with the conclusion that people need to be heard. What these great platforms don't do, they don't really interact with all the stakeholders of the local community. They just interact with the people that want to make money through their platform. So they are organizing their host. They are lobbying heavily with local governments, and they are trying to do their best just to make money, because that they are designed for that. The original narrative of Airbnb as a place for sharing economy and where people could, let's say, have an small extra income to renting a room or sharing their house with strangers is completely being overwhelmed by an army of real estate professionals that are using it as professionals, so with the pure goal of maximizing their profit. And what I've always perceived when talking with even with Airbnb themselves, because we met a couple of times at the beginning of our journey trying to discuss if there was a common ground, is that they really live in this kind of a bubble in which they believe that the amount of money that they generate is enough to justify all the negative consequences that they are easily perceived on the territory. So when you talk with them, you say, yes, but we create a lot of jobs. We bring a lot of money. We have allowed in small deserted villages to have services there and stuff like that. What they really lack, and they will develop it only at gunpoint, is social responsibility. Understanding that when you operate in a territory as a big, impactful organization, you have to work with the locals to define what is your impact, what is your how much water and people you display when you pass through these communities. I give you a small example. In Venice, at the peak before the pandemic, we had 10,000 flats and room on Airbnb only. And you say, okay, compared to London, we had 95,000. Our city is not a lot. Bear in mind that Venice is 3 by 3 kilometers. And as you know, it's an old city. You cannot build there. And it has only 38,000 houses. So 1 house on 4 at the peak was on Airbnb. Is it still a city if 1 house on 4 is only available for short-term rental and locals cannot find a place to rent or to buy or to live in? And when I was talking with them, when I talk with scholars or big CEOs of companies, I asked them, is there anybody in these companies that at a certain point look at these numbers and say, okay, it's enough. Okay, that's too much. We are actually damaging the society, the structure, the culture that we are making money from. And I believe there's not. I believe there is only if there is a strong movement of advocacy from locals that request to be heard. And then eventually something happens. And so you have to do your best to be as vocal as possible and to really reach out and ask to be heard. It doesn't mean that, I mean, the idea of a ban is something really strong and it is very difficult to obtain, especially because you have to mobilize big numbers of people. But it will something that probably will come as a consequence and something a bit less. Maybe just the idea of identifying a sustainable hosting in a sustainable way related to the territory. And this was our journey as for Airbnb, and I come to our project. But basically, after doing what the all the thing that Isaac was advocating, research, and talking with local politicians, lobbying, and even protesting, going on the newspaper. We decided, okay, nobody is listening. This is too big for us. They're never gonna, there's too much money involved and too many people that is involved in this, even in our own town. So what can we do? And so we decided to say, okay, let's try to lead by example and design a platform that does exactly what we would like Airbnb, Booking.com, Expedia to do. So work with the locals, wherever is active, to define what we call sustainable host, this almost mythological figure that is capable of running a short-term rental business, but with the idea of using it also to generate a positive impact in this community and not overstepping a certain level of, let's say, negative impact. For example, in our platform, we don't allow in cities like Venice landlords that are not residents. So we avoid the problem of the second homes, the people that just buy a house in another city just to make money out of Airbnb. And then we suggested that we have only hosts that are single listers. So basically they have only one secondary house, or even better, they rent in their own property where they live. So we came out with this idea that the best way was to show that it's possible to create a platform that is socially responsible and also that reinvest in social projects in the community. In fact, one of the peculiarities of Airbnb is that we donate 50% of the platform revenues, not the host. The host is totally free for the host. 50% of the platform revenues on social projects or local activities that are the kind of sponsored by the local host and therefore by their guest. I have to ask Paul and Simon, people can see the screen, like is on. Okay. So I can quickly share you something just to make you understand better what I'm talking about, basically. Can you see the screen? Well, I will spare you all the like 50 slides. Eventually we'll send the link and everybody has access. But I will show you really quickly what is our idea. Basically, we believe that there is a place for sustainable touristic operators, hosts, people that host, only if these people is connected with the community. And therefore, we have devised this simple model. It's really no rocket science, but we try to understand what was wrong with other platforms, why the other platforms are exploitative, why the other platform attract people that has only profit in their mind. And it's because they don't really close the circle, the link with the local community. So we, as Airbnb, has devised this model. Of course, we are a tiny speck in the universe of economy. So we are just started, we are a startup. We are actually launching in UK soon, where we partnered with the Big Issue Foundation from Big Issue and, you know, the popular street newspaper. And we are proposing this model where we ask the local, wherever we go, we actually create what you see here, local partner. We seek for local organizations that are willing to guide the platform to define what is a sustainable host, how many days a year should send, and we apply rigorously the rules that are defined by the locals. If the locals of a destination tell us, no, we don't want Airbnb, or we don't want also Airbnb or any other B&B platform, we are totally cool with it. We will come, or maybe we will operate only with small local hotels and bed and breakfast and inns and stuff like that. So we put the local community at the center, and we identify a system in which we strive to leave as much money as possible in the territory. But I have to stress, going back from the beginning, that this is not enough, because obviously we are a small startup. We hope to grow. We hope to be impactful and generate enough impact in the communities. But at the same time, you need advocacy. You need to reach out to your local politician. You need to be heard, not only by us, which our ears are already open, but also by those that don't want to listen. So this big platform needs to be brought to a table where they operate in a way they respect the local community.
Thank you for that, Emanuele. I hope you'll stay with us. I might take some questions a bit later on. Thank you. Our next speaker, again, back to a much more local level again, is David Greenfield. David is the Housing Strategy Manager at Calderdale Council. His role is to develop local planning and housing policies and maintain a database of housing data. He is local, having worked for Calderdale since, on and off, perhaps since 1985, and has lived both in Hebden and Todd. Thank you.
My feeling with the Airbnb is that it's been incredibly recent. It's been last.
Hold it closer. Oh, right. I didn't want to get feedback. Right. Okay. My feeling with the Airbnb is it's been incredibly recent in Hebden Bridge. First thing I noticed, I think, was when the flat above Bonsall's went as an Airbnb, and the loss of Bonsall's as well, which is a real shame. And we had an inquiry earlier this year from a councillor who mentioned the figure of 160 Airbnbs in the town. And I found out it's really difficult to find the truth of how many Airbnbs and similar short-term lets there are, because there's no formal registration system. Next slide, please. My head isn't in the way. So that was the first thing I looked at, was properties registered as self-catered holiday homes. And that is only where they are available for more than 140 nights a week. And they pay business rates. Sorry, a year. Oh, 140 nights. Yeah, 140 nights a year. Thank you. You should sit over my shoulder and proofread what I'm doing on these. That's a tiny proportion of the number of properties in Calderdale as a whole. And then next slide. Right, this was trying to count them from the websites. I only looked at self-contained and those excluded things like shepherd huts and huts in the garden, that sort of thing. So it's a sort of property that could otherwise be reasonably used as somewhere to live. And again, in Calderdale, 0.36% of the total properties. I don't believe that figure. It's really hard to count the number of properties from their website. And you need to do what Isaac and his team have done, and plot it and go out there and, I don't know how you physically count them, because they're not distinguished, but anyway. Next slide. But, you know, that's a very rough count, and it's 170 in the Upper Valley, more in Rippendon. So you do get a sort of visual impression of where they are. And just out of interest. Yep. Again, this is the official figure. This is from council tax. 367 second homes in Calderdale. So overall for Calderdale, and using the official figures, it's not many. It's about 5% of the new homes that we put in the local plan that we need. So as a borough, we're not in the position of places in Wales that are completely losing their identity, or South Yorkshire, or even North Yorkshire, South West. And our tourism manager says, well, there's a shortage of holiday bed spaces. We need approximately 70 new bed spaces to replace those lost during the pandemic. and she reminded us of the economic benefits that visitors bring. But I think we are concerned. First of all, we're not convinced about any of those figures. I'm not convinced about those figures. I think people, you know, don't pay business rates, or they occupy the houses as a house for half the year. So we need to sit down and actually plot where the Airbnbs are. They also mostly seem to be one and two bedroom cottages. I don't think we've got many big properties sort of let out as party houses, which is the problem in Moss Side. But what it does is remove from the rental market the sort of one and two bed cottages that young people can move into, or people with not much money. You know, I remember when I was looking for somewhere in Hebden Bridge when I first moved here. Yeah, you know, you could get a one bed cottage quite cheaply. There is also the possibility tenants lose accommodation, so the burden ultimately falls on the council if they're homeless. And there's the fact that they are, even from looking at the list, concentrated in certain places like Heptonstall, like Peckett Well, where they're going to have a disproportionate impact. You know, overall, if it's 0.5% across the borough, what's that matter? But if it's 20-30% of the houses in Heptonstall, that's starting to have an impact on the character of the village, on the attendance at the school, on the sort of goods that the local shops sell. So, and I think the other thing is, we just have very little control over this. So we don't even have the sort of health and safety control that a proper residential landlord is subject to, which maybe is why they're being converted. And the problem is, and this is where it gets a bit technical, I suppose, planary. Most Airbnbs and such like are in the same planning use class as a normal residential property. So from a planning point of view, they count exactly as the same. It takes no notice. So you don't need planning permission, as Isaac said. You don't need planning permission to change the use. There is some case law which accepts that whether there is a material change of use is a matter of fact and degree. So a cottage being used as Airbnb, you have a changeover once a week, you have a family in there, don't frighten the horses. Under planning law, that's no different to a normal house being occupied all the time. Where it becomes a place that's occupied by people who are not in a family, who create the sort of social problems, the noise problems, the coming back at 4 in the morning problems, there has been case law where councils have taken enforcement action against that sort of use, and it's been upheld by inspectors who have said, basically, it has changed its use. It is no longer just a residential property. It's a it's holiday accommodation. So there has been successful cases. But there doesn't seem to be many cases where the council has argued, we're taking enforcement action because we're losing accommodation that would otherwise be let. It's usually where there's been a problem of noise, disturbance, etc. So it's very difficult to enforce against, and we need to enforce. We've got one enforcement officer in Calderdale, planning enforcement officer. Very difficult to, you know, their workload is tremendous. If they're going to take action of this sort, they got to be pretty certain they're going to win, because that's going to take a lot of our resources to do. And also, I mean, the way it works is the first thing is you approach the owner nicely and say, hello, we think you're going to need planning permission because the use has changed. You then ask them to apply for planning permission, and if they don't apply or it's refused, then you go in with an enforcement notice. It's not easy. It's not easy to take enforcement action against anything. And there have been various sort of attempts around the country to try and put conditions on planning permissions or resolutions about this. A lot of those are connected with new build properties, which, as far as I can see, isn't the problem in the Upper Valley, because we don't actually have that much new build going on anyway. It's the conversion of the existing stuff. So what do we do? First thing is, yeah, I do intend to map all the Airbnbs and get some idea of the concentration, where they are, produce some percentages for some of the parishes and that sort of thing. From next year, the Valuation Office is going to collect data on commercially let properties, which will be a bit more accurate, I hope, than what we've got at present. The government so far has indicated it does not intend to change the planning rules to require planning permission for a change of use to a short-term let. But they did carry out consultation this year into a tourism accommodation registration scheme. And that was mostly around this health and safety issue. But it would at least label us to know which are Airbnbs and might deter some of the sort of, you know, it's going to cost people to have their properties made safe. So it might deter some of the changeover. That is where we are at the moment. And I think Emmanuel's right about communities, not just here in Calderdale, but around the country, putting pressure on government to say, this is a problem. And you'll have seen in the press about places in Cornwall, places in Wales, where they are... they're losing their identity because all the properties are becoming second homes, Airbnbs. You know, there's no one original left. So I'm afraid it's not very optimistic at the moment, but keep plugging away. Thank you.
Thank you for that, David. I'm going to invite Paul to speak to you in a moment, trying just to get a little more of a local handle on the property market. We did ask for local estate agents to turn up. Surprisingly, none were really willing to put their head above the parapet. Some of you may know that I work in property for a living, doing mainly sort of mortgage valuations throughout the north of England. And so come across the impact of Airbnb fairly regularly. And the anecdotal evidence from some areas is that actually some people who got into Airbnb during the pandemic and the rise of the staycation have subsequently left the market because they haven't found that the demand's kept up with what it was, where people are now jetting off around the world. So I don't know if there is a finite number. It may not be a finite number in Venice in terms of the number of people who want to go stay there, but in other areas which are sort of more marginal, it may be that there's a point at which the market is fulfilled, really, whether that's going to be the case in Hebden Bridge, I don't know. And the other thing also just to mention is that the income that's generated through Airbnb is not really helpful when people are getting a mortgage. They can't reflect that because essentially it's just another method of occupying a house. So a bank would not say, well, that's good, you rent it out as an Airbnb and you draw all that income from it. A landlord would not be allowed to keep, you know, to use that as a way to generate more money on the mortgage. Because we as cynical valuers would just say, well, we're just ignoring that, frankly. We're not going to let you have the benefit of that extra income that you might generate. But I know that Paul's spoken to one or two local agents, and I think one might even have written you a lovely letter, Paul, is that right?
So this will take 5 minutes, because we want to leave plenty of time for you to ask questions. So I'll get straight on with it. I spoke to 5 estate agents locally. I spoke to them 3 times each. And their personal opinion is, yeah, we want to keep local housing for local people at affordable. But they're sat in this business that has clients who want to generate the best return on the house. So the best response I got, the only sort of significant response I got, was from Claire Sheehan. And she's wrote this. She writes, such a contentious issue. Today, this largely unregulated industry is far removed from the original, slightly bohemian Californian concept. Most Airbnb bookings are not simply spare rooms in someone's home, where you can stay for a nominal rent and experience real life in new towns and cities. Today, most properties are entire homes in their own right, and therein lies the problem. The UK simply does not have enough homes to meet the demands of the population, in particular, affordable housing. Young people are particularly hard hit by this and forced to stay at home with parents way beyond the usual fledgling years. Home ownership has decreased this past 20 years, and once again, in particular for the young. At the same time, council housing stocks have been sold off, and new build just hasn't kept pace with demand. This has happened at a time when the population has grown approximately 16% since 2000, and more people are choosing to live alone. These problems are then exacerbated in popular areas such as Hebden Bridge, and increasingly so Todmorden. Towns such as ours have a continual influx of people wanting to move from neighbouring commutable cities for a better quality of life and more affordable housing, and also from the second home market, people looking to buy those second homes, those holiday properties. An Airbnb makes good business sense in a tourist hotspot, with much higher yields than private rental and far less regulation. The lockdown caused a sudden influx of buyers looking to acquire holiday accommodation in the UK as more and more people were having to stay at home for their holidays. The result of this demand for property unfortunately means local people are often priced out of the market. Local salaries cannot match the city commuters' earnings, so homes for rent and homes for sale are more and more beyond the reach of local people. Do we have a problem locally? Yes, undeniably so in my experience. Airbnb buyers are often chain-free cash buyers or require little finance and so are deemed a safe bet for many wanting to sell. Sometimes sellers will express a preference for wanting to sell to local people. But at what price? If you have a cash offer 5,000, 10,000 higher than a local person, would you say no? It has also been known for buyers not to always tell the truth. They may say they're buying for themselves and then change their minds at a later date. There is no way to hold buyers to account regarding their intentions. Some leasehold developments, principally apartments, do have and are increasingly having clauses in the leases that restrict commercial activity and Airbnb letting. These are often when local residents form part of the management companies and they try to restrict this activity to maintain a more community-minded approach. Restrict the party houses or the upheaval sometimes caused by an ever-changing flow of occupants. However, these options are only available with leasehold properties. There are, of course, positives to Airbnb. It opens up more holiday business opportunities, bringing visitors to shops, cafes, restaurants, and all this activity feeds the local economy and increases employment. However, it can be very seasonal, and you could argue that it gives with one hand and takes away with the other, as guest houses, hotels, and more traditional B&B accommodation suffer at the expense of unregulated Airbnb properties. And these types of accommodation are regulated, paying taxes and giving employment. Towns that do not have tourist trade seldom suffer with Airbnb issues, even though they may still suffer with a shortage of housing. So the problem is not necessarily Airbnb in itself, it's simply made worse. The presence of Airbnb simply makes it worse and breeds resentment. Personally, I feel everyone has the right to a home, and to deny that is akin to deny food, water, or air. There has to be some form of regulation to protect and provide for the general public. Therefore, Airbnb properties should be licensed, regulated, and taxed more effectively. And if the numbers were monitored and restricted where necessary, it would help. It seems fair to me that owners providing holiday accommodation, whether it's a hotel, a self-catering unit, should have a level playing field in terms of regulation. Business rates should apply instead of owners paying council tax, as with any other business property. Also, any income generated from fair tax and regulation could help go towards providing affordable homes for local people. I feel it's all about a balance. And that's Claire Sheehan. I'll let her know she got applause. I've got just three or four slides. There are things we can help. The Land Trust can help. As a land trust, we secure land, community buildings, and affordable homes as community assets in perpetuity. We've earned the trust of people in our community who invested £366,000 in community shares. And these are the things that are actually happening at the moment. So we have a property, a person, they have a house, and they have a rented property. In their will, the rented property comes to us when they die. And the reason for that is because it will be a community asset, an affordable rented home in perpetuity. We've had someone approach us wanting to sell their house at below market value, significantly below market value. They've got an Airbnb on the left. They've got a rented property on the right. It's quite a significant rent. When they went to UMove said, well, we market it nationally. We'll find you a buyer from down south and we'll have an Airbnb. So this person has come to us. We're trying to work on a solution that works financially for both of us. We've also recently had a land offered to us, land that's suitable for building homes. And that individual inherited this land. And they're interested in securing that land as affordable housing within the local community. And we've also had the asset transfers from Calderdale Council, the asset transfer at Burke's Court of the land there to enable us to build. So it's not all doom and gloom. Your local land trust is a great avenue to actually protect these things. And just before I go, I'm the employee. And I'm lottery funded for 3 years. And one of our targets is to increase our membership. So thank you, Marianne, who came in and filled your form in tonight. And if any of you aren't members, we're trying to get to 300 members and we've got 31 to go. So there's forms on that table. You can scan your way in and do it electronically. So I would love to see your members if you're not. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul, for that insight and that advert. You did a good job there. We will open the floor to questions now. Because we're recording this for future potential play out, Paul, I think, is going to try and get around with the mic. And so if you can just wait till he arrives, if you've got a question, then we can record the question and the answer. Anybody got any comments or questions you want to raise? Right at the back corner over there, Paul. He's on his way.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Is that okay? Can I hear that? You hear that? Is that close enough? Yeah, thanks. Can I just pick up on the first speaker, the issue of spring water? Because last year I objected to a planning application on a property next to me, which was clearly got commercial aspirations, which shares the same spring water as me. I got an agent, I put a 14-page objection in about what was happening, and the water issues got completely ignored. And I don't know where I can go when this character dries up my water. Does anybody know the answer?
Do you? I don't, but maybe the councilman might.
Thank you. Thank you, Isaac. I remember these issues from when I did development management donkeys years ago. I can't honestly remember what we used to do. I mean, it was always mentioned in the report, but I don't recall we ever refused a permission because it didn't have sufficient water. It's a matter, I think, between you and the other landowner. Well, there is a public health issue with that, but I mean the. But I mean the remedy is is, I think, and I'm not a lawyer, would be to seek legal advice about. Well, okay. What did they say?
It was very difficult because I would have had to go into a civil civil objection because it cost me a lot of money and still not won. There's no actual real legislation over spring water supplies.
No.
I couldn't find anybody in planning or anybody who could give me the answers.
I think that probably is the answer. I mean, that there isn't a solution. Apart from if your water is cut off, then you know, you've obviously got no water to flush the toilets. That would be an issue that it would be worth contacting Environmental Health about.
But it must also be a planning issue. If you're allowing a development that's clearly going to have more and more people on a short-term basis,
I don't know.
Pulling on the water supplies.
I can't really comment on an individual planning application, and I'm not aware of any planning policy that around that particular issue.
I'm on a shared spring. It tends to be something you have to work out between you, and that can be pretty hard. Exactly. Yeah, they don't understand about conserving. Yeah.
Paul, just forward a little bit if you would. Hi, I'm going to make an unpopular point. I would be very grateful if we can have this discussion with a little bit of perspective, as the numbers from the planning officer show, this is still a relatively minor problem, and while there are clearly more Airbnbs in this immediate district than just about anywhere else in Calderdale, even here it's not very great. I looked at the Airbnb website earlier today and counted about 100 properties in the immediate area of Hebden Bridge, including just above us in the hills. And 100 of those 100, there are still quite a lot of them that are rooms in houses. They are not going to turn into long-term tenancies if we were to ban Airbnb tomorrow. Neither is the piggery. Neither is the pod that has been built in somebody's garden. Neither is the converted agricultural barn that looks like it's just alongside the back of somebody's garden. Doesn't have separate access, doesn't have separate facilities. It's unlikely to be a very straightforward property to let. These properties are not necessarily in a very handy place for commuting or work. I noticed that quite a few of the properties listed on Airbnb are things like, you know, hotels or serviced apartments already that are advertising on Airbnb like they might advertise on booking.com. And indeed, Airbnb is not the only place where you can find holiday cottages. Once upon a time, of course, they used to be available over the phone. They used to be catalogues. You used to go to a travel agent once in a while to go and get one of these places. And I'm going to speak up for Airbnb, and I'm going to speak up for all of the rest of them, places like Vrbo, house swapping sites, which are commercial free. They're just free. You know, you may pay a small registration annually, but you get to swap with somebody who might live abroad. A great way of showing your family what it's like to genuinely live as part of another country's community. And I just point out, I'm probably one of many northern workers that go to other parts of the country to go and earn our crust. Don't let the suit fool you. I'm not a very well-paid man. But nevertheless, I have to travel a long way to go and find accommodation closest to the places where I can earn money. And I'm one of a whole troop of workers that cruise down the M1 on a Monday morning and come back on a Saturday or a Friday that evening, that week, that are doing things like shop fitting or electrician's work or construction work and earning money where it's available to bring back to places like here to be able to invest in our family and our future locally. Don't make that hard. Just ask yourself, is the solution that you're going to come up with going to actually be better than the status quo? Because certainly when I see that graffiti saying squat the Airbnb, I interpret that as violence.
Thank you. I mean, I don't think we want to suggest it's all negative. There are some positive benefits. And I don't know if, Emmanuel, you want to comment on that at all?
Me? Yes, well, there are obviously benefits for coming deriving from tourism in general, and obviously coming also from Airbnb. Nobody denies that. And I think the example that has been made, if I heard correctly, about the little loft or the little extension being rented or the room in the house, those are not the problem. Is entire homes. And I think that you need to focus on that. Is renting entire homes on whichever platforms sustainable? Home exchange is sustainable. Your swap residence or hosting somebody in your own home is definitely sustainable. Having investor buying not one, but two, three, four, five houses in a community and renting them exclusively on Airbnb or Booking or VRBO or whichever is not sustainable. So the important thing is to define, in my opinion, what is a sustainable way to do a legitimate activity like this. It doesn't mean because you can do it excessively. And that's when you damage your neighbors and your community. So I don't think it's about banning Airbnb completely or completely saying that any short-term, former short-term rental is damaging. Is to define what is damaging and what is not. At the end of the day, even when you buy a car or an appliance for your house, you have those labels that say A+, B, C, D, F, G. There are hosts that are AA+, they are super sustainable, and there are hosts that are not. And you have to decide who is fitting for your community and who is not.
Thank you. Questions at the back.
Take turns. Thanks very much. My name's Sarah Courtney. I'm one of your local councillors. Thank you very much for speaking up. It's really important that all voices are heard. I think, we live in a democracy and it's really important that we hear everyone's voice. So thank you. And that probably took a bit of courage to do that. So what I feel is that one of the problems around housing generally is that it's become very commodified. And, houses are commodities. They're not dwellings where people live. Well, they are, but they've also become sort of like have commercial value, don't they? They have a commercial value when they're sold, and they just sort of become commodities. So I think personally, for me, around the we do need short lets. We need short lets for people to be able to work away. I think that's true. One of my neighbours where I work, my work neighbours, does exactly that. He goes and does steel fittings, and he needs a short let to stay in. Hotels aren't necessarily that suitable if you've got a big crew and they're a bit smelly and dirty because they've been working hard all day. So I think some short lets are, but I think it's the regulation. And I think having people paying tax, which is really important for our communities and for our nation, people paying tax, having it regulated so that there is safety, I think is really positive. And people running things as businesses. If you want to run these things as businesses, then run them as businesses. And I feel the same about long-term let accommodation. It's like run them as businesses. We've got a real issue as well with short-term, with buy-to-let type things. Now, this isn't always very popular either, but I think, running housing as a business is fine, because you're thinking about the fact that someone might be staying there in long-term lets for 20 years. Having them as short, having them as sort of buy-to-lets, often people don't have that long view and the long picture. Anyway, that's a different topic, and I'm aware this is all about short-term lets. I think it's really positive not to call Airbnb necessarily. I think the origins of Airbnb about renting out a room was, really, really positive, as our friend from Venice has said. But I think just calling this holiday lets is a better term, because we're not sort of looking at any one particular company. But I think regulation from a safety point of view, from a business point of view, from taxation as well. I support progressive taxation. So that's my view on it. I think let's not demonise the thing of having some short-term holiday lets, because we do need those. But let's keep it in proportion and let's regulate.
Thank you.
Okay. I mean, I won't repeat what's just been said by my colleague Sarah. My name's Scott. I'm another one of your local councillors. I've actually got the portfolio for housing for my sins. And I know Airbnb is something that a lot of people want to discuss a lot of the time. I think, as David from the council sort of pointed out, the impact, albeit relatively low locally, I think he's pointed out how it makes such a dent in places like Heptonstall and some of our smaller settlements, and that hasn't yet been quantified. I think what's important is that at the moment we're at a place where maybe in comparison to St. Ives or other places it's low, but where is that peak, where is that cap before that change fundamentally happens and we're not able to walk ourselves back from it? And it feels like that's potentially nearer than any of us, you know, might want to think about. For me as well, it's that added on stuff, it's the sustainability aspect of stuff, but it's also a lot of anecdotal stories I'm hearing about young people. My son's 21, he would probably quite like to stay around here, maybe not immediately, he's definitely flying at the moment, but a lot of my friends' children who are now young adults wanting to buy in the area, and they're just not able to, and this is compounding the reasons why. I don't want to lay all the blame on Airbnb, it's broader than that, but I would like to appeal to our friends at Fairbnb to maybe look at Hebden Bridge as somewhere where we could maybe manage some of that social impact and bringing it back. We're here because we care about that, we actually pull together and we do stuff in our communities, so it'd be really good when you do come to the UK if you'd look towards Hebden Bridge as somewhere where maybe we might think about piloting some of your ideas.
Thank you. Any more questions? Oh, over there and then over here.
I've watched the growth of Airbnb in a short space of time and having considerable impact. And one of them is, anecdotally, I have never known so many people homeless being given notice from their private rentals, partly because the rentals are going up in price and some of them are no longer within the reach of people on universal credit, sometimes by only a short amount. And people in maturity, some of whom have health problems, not able to find somewhere else to rent around here. We don't have much accommodation, if any, as far as I know, in the Upper Valley, for people who are homeless. I have friends who are in a hostel in Huddersfield. What do we do about the knock-on effects of Airbnb in communities where we can't care for people any longer?
I think those issues are very much what led to the formation of the Land Trust. You know, we're here to try and engineer a local solution to housing problems. And as Paul mentioned, the more local members that we have and, you know, people who are active within our organisation helps us, number one, to identify the problems, but then also hopefully to identify the solutions as well.
My name's Tom Griffiths. I'm an independent advocate for Parasol. I've supported many people with housing issues over the last few years. And I just want to pick up what that solicitor said here. There's huge housing shortages. No news to anyone here of affordable and accessible housing. No news to anyone here. And she said, and I want to pick this up in my question, the problems are not caused by Airbnb. It's caused by other factors. But it might be aggravated by Airbnb. So I just want to ask a question about the underlying factors which cause a lack of affordable and accessible housing in Calderdale. Okay, there's a lack of affordable, accessible housing across the country. But I think there are local issues, and I'm sometimes concerned about the policy by Calderdale Council when people are challenged with a threat of eviction of being told, well, wait till it comes through and we'll sort out issues on the day when that happens. I don't think there's a lot of proactive, preventative action to help people who may be under threat of homelessness. And I don't think there's enough done at different levels, community, councils and other organisations together to address the need of a lack of affordable housing. Because we need to help, you know, I'm thinking of Scott. I'm not helping you, Scott, but someone like yours. Because if we don't help this next generation, we're all going to be a town, and Myron Road especially, a town of grannies and old men. I don't want that to happen.
I don't know if you've got a comment on that, David.
seem to be getting questions I hadn't prepared for, and probably about the lack of proactive action on people threatened with homelessness. I think that the homelessness unit is under an enormous amount of pressure dealing with people who are actually homeless, and have had to rely a lot on temporary accommodation, which we'd never done before. I mean, it's got better. It has got better in recent months, but you know, it's something that is fairly new to Calderdale. So they're dealing with people who are actually homeless, you know, and that's got to take priority. Perhaps you ought to have a meeting about how Calderdale deals with homelessness, because it's not my area. We are very, very acutely aware of the lack of affordable housing, of the numbers that are not being built, of the reliance that we have to make on Section 106 agreements from developers, and the scope for some developers to avoid the burden. Some of them don't. Some of them are very good at saying, providing what we want. Going right back, it always strikes me, if you look at the graph of house building in the UK in the different 10 years, the drop below the £300,000, 300 home target that the government set occurred at about the time that we stopped building council houses in a great number, and it's very visible. So, you know, make of that what you will.
Thank you. I'm quite aware of the time now, so has anybody got any urgent questions, or are we?
I'm non-urgent. We've still got.
We've got 5-10 minutes.
Thank you. I've lived here for nearly 40 years now, and I know for the last 35, there's been a tremendous lack of accommodation, hotel accommodation, bed and breakfast. And I know for all the business people who are visiting Colrec or any of the industries that we've grown around here, there is nowhere to stay. They really struggle. The White Swan hasn't got enough. We've seen one small hotel after another close down. But we've got a mismatch between the Airbnb has taken, or the holiday accommodation has taken the place of hotels. Now, hotels were located quite often near stations or where people were traveling by public transport. We could actually think about generating sustainable accommodation for the people who want to come in and manage the demand that way, as well as legislating to reduce the number of these whole houses which are being let out.
Thank you. Any more questions or comments? The showman again.
Is there perhaps another issue in this as well? Because has this situation been encouraged by the greater commercialisation of Hebden Bridge? More and more people are coming all the time, aren't they? Every building that shuts opens up as a bar, so you get more and more people coming all the time. So people start to become aware of it, want to stay here, buy it. So you know, perhaps there's another issue where it's become more and more popular by the activity that's been allowed to make it more and more commercial.
I'm sure that's the case. As a Tomenden resident, you can see that process starting to happen in Tomenden as well. But I would agree that the lack of formal hotel and bed and breakfast accommodation that has left a void, and that void is being filled by people with an entrepreneurial side to them. Do you think? But there are lots of hotels closed, isn't there? Scathcliffe Hall closed. All the hotel accommodation in Tomenden closed in the last 15, 20 years, perhaps. So I do think, I mean, as a commercial property surveyor, I've been trying to introduce developers and saying to them, why don't you build a hotel down the valley? And their answer is always, we don't think there's enough demand. But that is not what I see every day and every weekend when you come into Hebden. The demand seems clear and obvious to me. So maybe, as anything, as a land trust, what we can do is try and start that conversation with people who might want to build more formal accommodation to take up some of that demand that clearly exists. We wouldn't have Airbnb if people didn't want to stay here. So I think trying to put that genie back in the bottle is not going to happen. Those people are going to be coming. and it's how we manage their accommodation when they stay here. You may be aware that we are looking at setting up our own little holiday let in the station. Clearly, that's not a property that could ever be used by anyone on a permanent basis. But if the income that we can generate from that secures the life of that building going forward, then we see that as a positive thing. Any other questions or comments? Hebden Station, the signal box at Hebden Station, yeah. Which will be part museum and part holiday let. It'll be the world's smallest holiday let. Right in the very far corner, Paul.
I question the council's commitment to low. Sorry. question the council's commitment to building affordable housing. I sit on Wadsworth Parish Council, and we've recently had two separate applications. One was for a terrace of six affordable houses in a good infill position. Calderdale rejected that application, and the landowner put a subsequent application in for two large detached houses, and they were passed. In another instance, an application for barn conversion for five bedrooms, five bathrooms, and the applicant actually stated it was for a holiday home. In other words, a party house. Wadsworth Parish Council commented that it would be more appropriate to make that two affordable houses. Again, ignored, and it was passed as a five-bedroom holiday house. So I questioned the commitment. They make the right noises about saying they support affordable housing, but actions speak louder than words.
Thank you. Maybe we're already formulating the topics for our next lot of these events, with planning being very high on the list. It seems to have issues in lots of different places. Any final question for the night? In which case, I would like to thank you all for attending. I'd like to thank all our speakers for attending, particularly those that have attended from elsewhere in the continent. And that's... It's much appreciated, and we look forward to working with Fairbnb when they eventually arrive in the UK, and particularly in Heptonstall, I think. Just one final thing. Obviously, we're looking to get 31 new members tonight. So if anybody wants to fill one of our forms in, it's a quid to join. The more people we have as members, the more power we have to our voice when we have the conversations with the councils and other organisations. We can truly represent people. And so, yeah, I would encourage everybody to fill a form, and if you haven't done already. Thank you.